let me come down here since it's a comfortable sized room and I don't have any overheads. I'll just mention before I do anything else, while I don't have any overheads, I will refer you to our website, which is just www.cni.org, for further information about my organization, and you'll find pointers there to information on many of the topics I'm going to touch on. Now, Anders asked me to introduce myself, so I'll do that before introducing my topic. My name again is Cliff Lynch. I'm the director of an organization based in Washington, D.C., called the Coalition for Networked Information. The Coalition is an organization with about 200 institutional members, predominantly higher education institutions in the United States, but also including publishers, government agencies, information technology providers, and scholarly societies, which is concerned with the use of advanced technology and digital information to advance scholarship, teaching, learning, and intellectual productivity. We've been in operation for about 10 years. I've been director since about 1997. One of the things that the coalition tries to do is bring together a set of disparate groups of people who are concerned with this whole set of issues around technology and digital information to enhance scholarship. Those people include librarians, information technologists, network engineers, instructional technologists, people who are building learning support systems and interactive instructional media, publishers, university and commercial presses, and of course policymakers of all kinds. And through bringing together those people, we work a rather broad agenda dealing with everything from the creation and management of content to organizational policies around the implementation of digital systems and digital content, and then on into areas that are more specific to standards, infrastructure, and technology to support digital information. So that's a little bit about who I am and where I come from. My background is in computer science, although I've spent a lot of time doing library automation work during my career. And that's enough about me. What I thought I would talk with you about for the next 40 minutes or so is some of the issues and areas involved in infrastructure to support networked information, and in particular to support sort of large-scale content dissemination and management on the net. One of the things that I think it's important to recognize and that we often forget is just how much information is moving onto the network today, and the great diversity of types of information that are moving onto the net. We tend to think about websites and web pages and occasionally perhaps databases that are searched through web-based interfaces. In fact, there's a lot more going on. If you look, for example, at academic science, the vast majority of the journals in academic science now have moved to the web. Physics, biology, Earth and space sciences, mathematics, and we're seeing similar movements, although a little bit more slowly, in the social sciences and the humanities. Now, this kind of information is highly structured, and unlike many websites, there's a tremendous premium on ensuring the long-term integrity of that information. As the record of science and scholarship, it's essential that it be preserved and that it be usable over very long periods of time. We're starting to see very exciting things happen in areas like digital libraries. People are constructing systems that teach, systems that support scholarship, that are vast collections of multimedia information. Some of these are being produced by individual scholarly groups, often with government funding. Some are being produced as actual federal programs. For example, in the United States, we are now seeing the National Science Foundation funding something called the National Science Digital Library, which is intended to support science teaching, particularly in secondary school, but also in universities. We are seeing in the United Kingdom, for example, some very large government investments in digital cultural content. They are imaging paintings, drawings, sculptures, artifacts. They are also starting to put up collections like entire elementary and secondary school curricula to support teaching. These are very sizable investments. In the case of the UK, you're talking certainly hundreds of millions of pounds over a period of years. And we're seeing lots and lots of these sort of initiatives move forward. Again, these are situations where we really need to be able to manage and refer to and maintain this kind of information. I'll give you a couple of other examples of things that are happening that I think are significant. Cultural heritage and cultural memory institutions, libraries, museums, archives, have recognized now that their responsibilities to maintain the cultural record are going to have to be extended to digital information as well as print information and physical artifacts. And you're starting to see large-scale programs coming out of some of the national libraries in Europe, some of the research libraries around the world, the U.S. Library of Congress, and other organizations that are really looking at how do we preserve digital information in the long term. There is a reference model, the Open Archival Information Systems model, which is progressing as an ISO standard. This gives us a reference model to talk about the processes of preparing information for archiving, maintenance in the archive, and subsequent retrieval from the archive for various users, and looks at the various documentary and informational transformations that support that. This is all part of information infrastructure, the things to support this. I'll give you one other example, which I think is very interesting and very revealing, before I get into the specifics here. There's been a tremendous amount of talk about electronic books. I'm sure you've all seen the newspaper articles and the silly TV things where they show you these little handheld machines and say, gee, this is like a book. You can read a book on it and throw away your book and get one of these things to replace your book. And in fact, it precisely replicates the book. You can even turn virtual pages on it, which is a very strange thing to do, in a way, to think of limiting what you can do with a new medium to replicating the physical properties of an old medium. And if you look at the discussion around those, it's mostly been involved in things like rights management and how we make sure people can't make copies of these or print them or share them with their friends. At the same time that the big commercial interests have been promoting this sort of view of how the book moves to the digital world, we've seen some very, very exciting things happen as scholars, mostly, although also experimental fiction writers and some others, have tried to think about what is the intellectual successor to the book in the digital world. And recognize the book is not one thing. There are many, many kinds of books. There are cookbooks, there are dictionaries, there are novels, there are scholarly monographs, there are atlases. There's a whole lot of things that are lumped together as books. And each of these seems to have a new and different developmental trajectory as we think about authoring in the digital medium. So this is another thing that's starting to show up. A final thing that is really, I think, just emerging as a consideration is a recognition that we need to think differently about collections of information. if you think about what's happened historically, you have people who author books, articles, things like that. They may might make citation in their work to another work. And this, of course, has a direct translation in the network world to links that you can follow, and I'll come back and talk about that issue a little bit later. But there's a very literal translation of that. Beyond those kind of references, though, if you think about how we aggregate information, how we build the library, there's not much interplay between the information. You have all of these separately authored works, and they don't interact very much. Recently, we're starting to see experiments that involve federation of digital libraries, very large-scale computational text mining and linkage, various kinds of data mining and other integration, which are starting to suggest that in the digital world, we can build systems into which you can contribute works, and where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And that is a very exciting and different kind of world than we've been in the world of physical artifacts of authorship and communication. If you want to get a very interesting sense of where this might take you, I would invite you to look, for instance, at the Perseus Project, which is hosted at Tufts University. This is the work of a professor there named Greg Crane and a bunch of his colleagues. And what they started with was classical Greek and Latin literature. And they built up a corpus of classical Greek and Latin literature. They then linked this to translations, to dictionaries, so that you could look at word usage and meaning, to concordances, so that if you encountered a phrase, you could look at how where else that phrase was used in the classical literature. Now, those kind of concordances, by the way, are very important in classical studies. In fact, if you go back to the 19th century, you will find German classicists, for example, who do their life's work doing concordances to the works of Homer or something like that as their scholarly life work. And now, of course, we can do that in a very automated way. But then they began to go farther. So much of classical literature is linked to imagery, to pictures. It's linked to understanding the geography of the classical world, the layout of classical architecture, buildings, cities, all of that. And so they began to integrate that kind of material. Now, what they've been doing more recently is they've been applying some of the same techniques to, I don't know what to call it. You could call it a database or a website or a monograph, some sort of new scholarly work, which deals with literary London in the, say, 17th through 19th centuries. And what they've done is they've taken works in digital format from that period. They have digitized in a structured way things like biographical dictionaries and street maps. And then they've begun to computationally link all of this material and then refine the links through human intervention and editing. So we're starting to see these very sophisticated integrated works now show up in the digital world. One of the problems we face, of course, is infrastructure to support this and, frankly, to manage commerce in it in the long term. Here's an example of the commerce kind of issue. If you look at any large university library today, in fact, they are paying for and licensing large amounts of digital content on behalf of their students and their professors. The journal subscriptions, which used to come in physical form, are now journals that exist on some publisher's server somewhere. And what they are doing is essentially licensing access to that server. The problem, of course, now is that they somehow have to be able to set up a situation so that every student, every faculty member at that university can demonstrate to each publisher that they are a legitimate user of that licensed commercial information. And the way they started to do it, of course, was by source IP address. So if you came from the university's network, you were a legitimate user. But as users move off campus, as residential broadband gets deployed, as more and more people want access to this material from their homes or their workplaces or other places, source IP address doesn't work. They've tried to get around this through proxies. Proxies are very problematic, where basically you log into a proxy at the institution and then you go out from there. And the institution has said to all of these vendors that if the person comes from this specific address, which is our proxy, we have already validated them. That doesn't work very well either. Proxies are become problematic as you want to move streaming media content through them, as you want to move interactive material, Java or something like that, because you have to do all kinds of rewriting of the pages as you move through the proxy. What we'd like to do is to have identity management systems which would permit universities to provide proof of identity, proof of affiliation out to these information suppliers. But we'd also like to do this in a way that honors the privacy of the individual user. You don't necessarily want the user to present a passport with his or her name or the digital equivalent. You want them to present proof that they're a member of the university community, not necessarily enough information so that they can be individually monitored in great detail unless they separately agree to that as part of the way they want to make use of the resource. So one of the first and most fundamental pieces of infrastructure that we're struggling with and that we've been struggling with for a number of years now is the management of identity. The current thinking about this is that this is going to be based on public key infrastructure, but we're still trying to understand how many public key infrastructure systems we're going to have, how they're going to be interlinked, how trust is passed from one to the other, how these sort of group identities are going to be managed in their affiliations. We are still working very hard on questions about how identity and the management of identity relates to directories and relates to attributes of people, which are perhaps better stored in directories and retrieved dynamically rather than bound into the certificates themselves. And this is something that, at least in the community I operate in, which is mostly the higher education world, we're spending a tremendous amount of time and struggling with. This is going to be very important for dealing with access management, but it also has ramifications that go far beyond access management and that we have hardly begun to explore. Again, let me just give you one example here of where we have mechanism, but we don't really understand the social and institutional things that go around the mechanism. I'm sure you're all familiar with the notion of digitally signing objects, having a public key and a private key and being able to use your private key to sign an object, which often is interpreted to mean that in some way you approve of it or take responsibility for it, but it really just means that you did a computation on it. And it's necessary to build up a whole semantics of indicating what doing that computation means. Does it mean you're cognizant of it? Does it mean you agree with it? Does it mean you authored it? We don't have many of those things in place. Further, there are a lot of concerns in the digital world about being able to deal with issues of authorship, of being able to prove who author, have an author prove that he or she wrote something. Now, in fact, the way we do authorship in the world is very complicated. Sometimes individuals author things. Sometimes groups of individuals author things. Sometimes things are authored under aliases. Sometimes things are authored under corporate names. Sometimes things are authored under just made up working names of groups, the Surrealist Manifesto. Now, what grantor of identity is going to pass out identities for authors? Who's going to do that, and under what terms? Is this a function that publishers will do? Is this a function that some new third party will do? This is all part of the kinds of questions about the management of identity and authenticity in networked information, which implies a big infrastructure. Now, let me move on to a couple of other issues. There's been a tremendous amount of work done on metadata. Metadata, the short version, is some sort of structured information about information. It might be descriptive things: who wrote it, when it was created, when it was last modified, what it's about. The sort of thing that historically librarians did in describing books, or indexers did in summarizing articles. It might be other things. It might be structural information about how to interpret the digital object. It might be information about how an image was captured, what the color settings were on the camera, and similar sorts of information. So it could be a whole lot of different things. There has been a good deal of work on simple descriptive metadata, the so-called Dublin Core Initiative. They're still struggling with how to express this and how to build extensible systems and to deal with the right balance between extensibility and specificity, which is very important for specific small communities that want to describe information very precisely, and yet how to balance that with the kind of interoperability you want to facilitate cross-disciplinary research or searching of lots of different collections of information, each of which has been described by its specialist primary users. That's another piece of the puzzle. And going beyond that sort of descriptive metadata, there's work going on in structural and administrative metadata. There's a project called METS, for example. There is work going on computed kinds of metadata that are used to do retrieval. There's a great deal of work trying to understand metadata. Metadata has been a subject of inquiry for a long time, in fact, for longer than we've been calling it metadata. But something that has really only come to the fore much more recently is the question of the mechanics of moving metadata around. This used to be done in a very ad hoc, application-specific sort of a way. For example, you would find, going back 20 years now, people would build union library catalogs by copying records for books out of individual library catalogs. And so you might build a union catalog of all the libraries in Sweden or all the libraries in California so you could search one database. That was all done by sort of specialized ad hoc arrangements. Recently, we have seen probably the most atrocious large-scale ad hoc arrangement imaginable, and that is web indexing. Things like Google or AltaVista that basically build up lists of all the pages they can find by following links, and then they read all the pages and they do computations on them in order to produce indexing data so that you have these databases you can search on the web. This is very, very inefficient, by the way, because as they come through a site looking at what's changed, they basically have to re-index the whole site. They don't have a way of just saying, oh, tell me what's changed, and I'll just take those off. So there are enormous scaling and efficiency problems with this. One of the things that's happened in the last 18 months, which I think is very important, is that we've complemented some of the thinking about metadata with thinking about systems for disseminating metadata. And this is a project, an international project, called the Open Archives Metadata Harvesting Initiative. What this does is it provides a very simple, low barrier to entry interface which permits a site to make available metadata for objects that it holds, whatever those objects may be. And it can provide that metadata in different formats. It can provide metadata incrementally in the sense that you can come to a site and say, give me metadata for things that have been added or changed in the last 3 weeks, rather than everything that you have. There is some ability to partition sites so that, for example, you can have multiple logical collections on a site, and you can say, I'd like only material on physics. But I want to make clear that this is not a searching interface. The idea here is not really that you provide a very detailed search and you get a very detailed search result. This is a way of identifying potentially rather large sets of metadata about objects that are held on a site, which can then be pulled back into services that index them, refine them, match them with other content, build consolidated retrieval systems for them. One of the things you could do with this that I don't think anybody's really doing yet is you could use this as a general purpose interface for indexing websites, thereby providing a much more efficient way of indexing a website than the sort of thing that the current web indexing services do. There are a large number of prototype projects going on with this at this point in areas as diverse as collections of images of cultural artifacts all the way through electronic e-prints and preprints of scholarly articles in fields like physics. You can find at the openarchives.org website a list of all of the various prototype projects going on here. Now, what's important here is that this finally gives us a way of moving metadata around that's sort of standardized and well-established. It also, of course, leads to a lot of new questions and further highlights some things that we don't understand very well. And I'm just going to identify two of them that I think are particularly important. One is a question about granularity. Suppose you've got a site with hundreds of thousands of objects, and perhaps you don't have extremely detailed description for all of those objects. Suppose you've got them in groups. Is the right thing to do to provide metadata for each object so that the model is that when you follow a link, you go directly into that specific object? Or is the model to somehow describe aggregates, to say there's a collection of material here, and if you're interested in this kind of material, you should come to the site and use the site's tools to navigate and to find what you're interested in? That's a very key question, and it's one that we're having a lot of trouble dealing with, in part because we really don't understand very well how to describe large collections of information so that they can be found. Particularly in environments where you might have a very large database in some kind of a resource discovery service, and right next to it you might have an individual document. The individual document might be full text indexed. The large database, who knows, it might be described only descriptively, or you might actually wind up exporting every keyword that appears in the database. We need a lot more experimentation to understand how to deal with this issue of aggregated resources. And there are many people working this from different angles, but it seems to be a fundamentally very difficult problem. Now, the other issue, which I think Open Archives underscores, but also is underscored by the behavior of the web indexing services, has to do with metadata and trust. Metadata, as I said earlier, is just information about information that someone or some computational process has created. If you don't know who produced it, you don't know whether to trust it. When you talk to the people who run the web search engines, and you say, well, why aren't you using metadata? Why can't I put some metadata on my web pages that say I authored it and when it was created? And why won't you put that in your database? And what they'll tell you is that they spend a good deal of their time and energy dealing with people who are coding up web pages to fool them so that the web pages are retrieved at inappropriate times, web pages that appear to belong to one person and belong to another. There are a lot of people out there trying to fool the web search engines and make them produce low-quality results for various reasons. And as soon as you start talking about metadata, it becomes much harder. At least when they're indexing web pages, they can do some sort of computational verification and checking to try and see that what they're getting is plausible. It's very hard to do that with metadata. You're taking someone's word for it. When we talk about Open Archives metadata harvesting, if we're going to build harvesters, they're going to need to figure out what sites to harvest. Now, early on, that can be handled by editorial control, by simply handcrafting lists of known good sites. That's fine for small-scale systems. That may be fine indefinitely for certain kinds of harvesting applications that deal with narrow fields of scholarship or narrow specialized niches, and where the editorial process of selecting sites is an important part of the value of the service. But it seems inevitable that we are going to find situations where people are going to want to be able to discover sites to harvest, and where those applications are going to need to make judgments about the reputation and reliability of these sites. Now, interestingly enough, it turns out that this whole notion of trust and reputation is emerging as a very sort of thematic and general purpose piece of infrastructure. This is actually quite surprising. Some of this came up in early work, for example, on things like PGP with its web of trust, where you set up these notions about, I'll trust a signature if someone else vouches for it, essentially, or if two other people vouch for it, you can assign strength to the vouching if you wish. If you look at some of the work that's gone on in peer-to-peer computing recently, you'll see that all of those systems basically require that you trust metadata from people that you don't know. And in fact, all of these systems are potentially very vulnerable to interference, and in fact, interference to the point of destruction by people providing bad metadata. You may not be aware of this, but back in the days of Napster, which basically relied on collecting up metadata from lots and lots of users into a central directory, there was serious discussion about what would happen if the record industry was unable to shut it down legally. And there were actually people working on a set of attacks which were called Napster pollution, where basically what you do is you make sound recordings of breaking glass or other unpleasant noises, preferably in rather large files, and then you send false metadata to Napster describing these as the latest pop hits that people are looking for. The idea being that the Napster database becomes polluted, people become frustrated, and they stop using Napster. The way you end up dealing with all of these sorts of things is by handling ideas about trust and reputation on the net. This is close. A prerequisite to this is some level of identity management, because you need to be able to talk about identities, not necessarily individuals, but persistent identities, to talk about trust and reputation in those identities. And there's, in fact, a whole set of technologies that are now starting to come into play which deal with these issues of trust and reputation. And you can see how these may have a very powerful effect as they become deployed on things like, how do we find information? One of the ways we find information is sort of mechanical, searching, traditional information retrieval, matching keywords, things like that. Another way we find information is social. It's through recommendations. It's through asking people who've given us good recommendations in the past or people that other people think highly of. This sort of infrastructure is going to enable those sorts of applications. Now, I've covered quite a few things, and there are quite a few more things that I could talk about. I notice my time is starting to run short. Identifiers are a very critical part of this. Without identifiers, something like URNs, we can't make long-term reference to objects on the net. We have very problematic issues about persistent long-term reference. Notice I said reference, by the way, not linking. One of the great dangers in dealing with the information management issues here is to become too short-sighted about technology. There's a great tendency to believe now that the web is forever going to be the way we organize and link and store information. Some of you may remember Gopher. Some of you may remember making large investments in collections of information that were stored there. Some of that information remains very valuable, even though Gopher itself is of only historic interest. So there are some hard issues about how to keep identifiers somewhat disentangled from particular information storage systems of the day, but at the same time to make them useful within those contexts. There are also some things we're learning about the management of identifiers. For example, some organizations have to step up to the responsibility of assigning these, of creating resolution databases, and of figuring out how these interrelate to metadata about the objects they describe. We've seen some very interesting things happen in the publishing world. That problem I alluded to earlier about how you link from a citation to a cited work when one may be from one publisher and one may be from the other. And the publishing community has set up a system called Crossref and an identifier system underneath that to try and make that work. And they've done fairly well at it. But the whole issue of how you finance and set up and govern an organization like that is a very difficult one. And frankly, I think we've still got a lot of very unresolved issues to deal with here. This is fine, this cross-referencing, for a sort of a club of established publishers. But how do we begin to thread unpublished works, works from non-traditional sources into this? How do we deal with questions about the privacy of search trails and things like that, resolution trails? All of these are questions and questions that need to be looked at. Searching is another important part of the infrastructure. We have some fairly mature protocols like Z3950, which work only in limited domains. We have other protocols coming along, things like XML query language, which are, frankly, at least for me, difficult to evaluate in the current state of maturity. Most of these are sort of point-to-point search protocols. You send a query from a client to a server. Yet, it's clear there's a need for other kinds of broadcast or more distributed search protocols. And again, we need to understand better how those should be structured. Then I'll just make one final point. The things I've talked about so far are very general in their application and utility. It's also clear there's another level of things just one up from there, which are also going to have high leverage as networked information resources. One example I've been looking at a bit recently is gazetteers. Now, a gazetteer, in case any of you aren't familiar with this fairly arcane English noun, is basically a giant directory which has place names, like the name of a city or a town or a river or a mountain, geographic coordinates, and various kinds of scoping information. Perhaps it indicates the city was called something from 1800 to 1900, and then they changed its name to something else. Perhaps it has the name of the city in multiple languages. Perhaps it has other sorts of scoping information. These things can be used to georeference other kinds of textual information or to link spatial and textual information in ways we're just starting to understand. Most gazetteers today are embedded in various kinds of GIS systems. If we can expose those as network services so that you can do sort of arbitrary and casual georeferencing, that will give us a tremendous integrative power across various kinds of work. So that's an example of one of many of things at just a slightly higher level of specificity, which I believe are also going to find themselves as being part of this information infrastructure to support scholarship, to support dissemination and long-term management of information, of cultural heritage, of scientific work and other materials. I think I've gone on about as long as I should at this point. I hope I certainly haven't been able to be comprehensive here, but I hope I've given you at least a flavor of some of the interesting research and interesting developments and deployments that are going on, and also some sense of some of the things we don't know, as well as some of the things that we're starting to get experience with and becoming a bit more confident about. I would be happy to answer any questions, either on material I covered or on other questions around this topic generally.